When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's heartbreaking loss to Utah. 34-32 is the loss. What can you say? We're here to talk about it in the CarCast. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, along with my co-host here in the Rancho Studio, Lisa D'Angelo.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Called you on the phone on the way home. Didn't want to completely blow the CarCast, but we talked before. Sorry, Keely. And I said, like, how much do you never, like, from the SC perspective, do you just never want to see Utah again? It's, like, extreme, right?
Good riddance.
It has
good
to
riddance.
Be, it has to be maxim. But don't say good riddance. At this pace,
at this point,
they will find a way to meet in Vegas again.
They'll meet, yeah, somehow. I don't know how it happens. Tiebreaker is how it works out. But knowing our luck, it'll be USC-Utah in the Pac-12 title game inexplicably.
Somehow. I don't know.
By all means, enjoy the Big 12. USC goes to the Big 10. And, yeah, if I never have to watch USC play a Kyle Whittingham team again, I will be fine with that.
Yeah, and the crazy one is, Cam Rising suiting up in Bryson Barnes' jersey tonight. Maybe Kyle Whittingham's greatest move of all time. What can you say? Welcome for joining us here live on YouTube. There's a billion of you guys here, and you were all waiting. And
we appreciate you for that.
Yeah, what can you do? SC loses an absolute heartbreaker tonight, a game in which, what can you say, the offense didn't perform well, the defense didn't perform well. They had a chance to win it in the dying moments. Did not happen. They could not get the defensive stop that they needed at the end. Utah came into this game ranked 122nd in yards per play. They averaged 6.9 yards per play, more than 2 yards their average. Bryson Barnes, third string Utah quarterback, looked like Al Roberson. 57 yards on the ground, 235 through the air, 3 touchdowns. Sione Vaki?
The safety?
The safety. I'm pulling up the numbers right now.
The safety?
The safety. 217 all-purpose yards for Sione Vaki.
The safety who USC couldn't have even said they were caught off guard with, like Cal could.
Right.
Because last week they unveiled him as mm-hmm. their secret weapon on offense. So USC knew that was coming and still designed a defense that on multiple occasions would have Braylon Shelby one-on-one with Sione Vaki, because that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's not once, but twice, by the way.
Yeah, twice.
Okay, let's talk about the Braylon Shelby thing. The first time it happened, horrible matchup.
Yeah.
And, you know, good on Bryson. I keep wanting to call him Bryson Shaw, Bryson Barnes, for seeing it, right? Like, if the game plan was make Bryson Barnes throw the ball and make him beat you that way, I don't hate that game plan. Going into a game where you're bringing Caleb Williams to the table, right? Like, if that's what the game plan was, okay. You get beat on it the first time, though, and then it happens again in the second half. Like, there's no... In the fourth quarter, there's no excuse for the second time, right?
No, which is why it... okay, this is a very weird game. This is such a weird game because on the one hand, I could sit here and argue that USC's defense is the only reason they were even in the game.
Oh, it absolutely is. That's the irony.
Kalen Roby scores a pick six to put USC straight back in it after they're down by two touchdowns. They are getting the stops that they need to get in the middle quarters when USC's offense can do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They are being aggressive and getting to the quarterback and making run stops and getting big drive stops.
They gave 247 on the ground. I don't know if we can talk a lot about
stops. But remember, this is only part one of a two-part statement.
Oh, sure. I'll let you keep going.
Part one of a two-part statement. There were a lot of things to like about USC's defense in this game in sort of an individual bubble. Part two of the two-part statement is, even with all of those individual things to like, even with all of those things that are like, okay, the defense was keeping USC in it, they were making plays, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This was a horrendous defensive performance. Like, horrific.
Yeah.
Because of the context of Utah's offense. The context of Utah's offense is an offense that can barely score 14 points, that isn't putting up numbers on anybody, that isn't scoring 30 points on anybody,
mm-hmm.
that is doing very, very little at any point in any context for the entire season.
Yeah.
And USC goes out and, like you said, makes Bryson Barnes look every bit as good as Cam Rising. Like, who needs Cam Rising when it doesn't matter what quarterback you put out there if you're facing USC's defense? They're going to make you look like he looked. They're going to make your running backs also, your running game is suddenly going to come alive.
Yeah.
Because USC's defense is only going to get stops 50% of the time, and the other 50% of the time, you are free to run along, sir. Because half of the time, there will be a missed tackle or a bad fit. Or a bad angle, or name a million things. It's what the defense is. It's what we've come to expect from the defense. And the one thing that I want to say about the defense that I will continue to say, if you want to have a sense of not complete just desolation after this game, is: say what you will about the defense and how terrible they are most of the time, these dudes go out there and fight. Like, they're fighting hard. Like, it's sad watching this defense because it's not like they're not out there trying.
That's one of the great ironies of this game is SC is, you know, a minute 46 away from... Well, I guess a wide field goal away from us sitting here and saying, you know, maybe this is the moment that they needed to turn things around. Maybe this is, it's, you know, look at the way Washington's playing tonight against ASU. Anything is on the table. SC gets through Utah. Maybe this is the, I joked about it on Twitter earlier that they needed the Chris Richard pick six moment that Pete Carroll got in Tucson against Arizona, and that's what spearheaded everything. They needed sort of that moment on defense, And you could sit here and say, well, maybe that was it with the Kalen Bullock pick six. And, you know, the Zachariah Branch with the big return, and then Caleb Williams came through in the clutch, and, like, you know, the heart and the fight on spirit that this team has.
Mm-hmm.
I think all that stuff can exist still, but, you know, still losing the football game just sours so much of it. When you look at Trojans have two losses, one in the Pac-12. It's going to be very difficult to get to the Pac-12 championship game, because you always should have had it in your mind that a split of the Oregon-Washington schools was probably at least a likely scenario. Now you would need to win both of them to get to the Pac-12 championship game, which is an extremely unlikely scenario. So it's like the season absolutely... to the brink. And you sit here and you can look back at all the things about how SC got to this point. How did they lose this game? They lost it by chasing the points in the third quarter, or early in the fourth quarter, on a 2-point conversion they didn't need to do.
To me, that is the egregious call. That is the egregious.
It's 34-34 if they don't chase the points.
This is on Lincoln Riley 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And I would continue to say this, having, you know, watching the amount of college football that I watch on a Saturday. I'm there from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. with full, just every game that's on, I'm trying to watch it. Game management is terrible. Everybody is terrible. No one makes the right calls most of the time. Like, coaches suck at this.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I wish coaches would embrace, that is very simple to embrace, is a keep it simple, stupid mentality of do not chase a 2-point conversion until you must score a 2-point conversion in order to stay alive in the game.
Yeah.
Do not chase a 2-point conversion until you have to take a 2-point conversion. And right. That lost USC the game in a lot of different ways, because if they don't chase those points after the pick six, which, for the record, I know it's Kalen Bullock. I was making a Nickel Roby joke. It's fine. They don't chase those points. They take the point. They don't have to chase another 2-point conversion later. They take the point. Utah, at best, can tie the game with a field goal. You right. go to overtime, and if you're USC, given the momentum of the game, you have to feel pretty good about your chances in that overtime. So terrible, horrible, no good decision. Do not chase the damn 2-point conversion points ever. Just learn that very simply, and you will win more football games than you lose in those scenarios. Sorry, go ahead and say your piece.
Yeah, Richard in the chat says that the two early wasn't insane given the pace of the game. Obviously wrong in hindsight. I'm of the mind that you don't go for two to... You go for two at the very end when you need it. Yes, I agree. You also make things a one possession game when you absolutely need it to be. Like, you keep it a one possession game, right? Like, if you're down 11 and you score a touchdown, don't go for two. Make it eight, so that way it's a one possession game, because then suddenly if you're down 11 and you miss it, suddenly you're down four.
You just don't know, right? If you're gonna score, like, if you still need to score, then just leave it at that. Like, yeah. No matter what, you have to go out and score something. Like,
yes.
don't pigeonhole yourself into losing points because you're trying to gain them to pick them back up. And I get right. it. It's not necessarily the most egregious 2-point decision that I've ever seen. It's not a situation where, you know, even every coach out there wouldn't also make a similar decision. But I am a huge proponent of not, number one, don't chase points, and number two, take the points. Always take the points.
Yeah, 'cause
you'd never know. You might end up with a field goal later on, and then that field goal might change your calculus later, or you might end up with a touchdown later on, and that might change your calculus. Like, just... don't make it too complicated. Take what points are available to you if you can afford to take those points. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah, I saw in the chat that was, did the analytics say to go for, maybe, but like, I'm all for analytics. I'm all for analytics in every shape and form, with the exception of two things that drive me nuts. One of them is the decision to go for two or not. While I'm a proponent of going for two probably more often than most, this is one that I wouldn't have done. The other one, the flip side of it, not that this is a baseball podcast, but, you know, sometimes you can keep Blake Snell in the game. You know, the... okay, so the two-point conversion, one reason that SC loses the game. The other reason that SC loses this game is they start out just absolutely on fire, 14 points. They pass what Utah was only allowing 12 points a game coming into the game. And SC absolutely comes back and, comes out of here 14 points immediately in the first half, in the first quarter, and everything is rolling. SC is, you know, running the ball down Utah's throat with Marshawn Lloyd. Suddenly, like, you know, 100 yards of rushing in the first quarter when Utah only allows 66 per game. And then something happened.
I choose not to run.
And I don't quite get completely why. I think I get part of why, but not completely. SC in that first quarter, like I said, 10 rushes for exactly 100 yards. They finished the game with 23 rushes for .145.
10 of those rushes were the quarterback, for the record.
Yeah, it's...
So in reality, USC handed the ball off to running backs 12 times.
Yes, after being able to rush for 100 yards in the first quarter.
Both of those running backs averaged 6.2 and 12.3 yards per carry.
Yeah, I
and even if you take out Marshawn Lloyd's 45-yard long run, his average is still very good.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil the over-under, but we did an over-under about sack-adjusted rushing yards per carry. Mm-hmm. SC's sack-adjusted rushing yards per carry in this game was 8. If you told me it was 8, there was no way that SC should lose this game.
Yeah.
But it's 8 because they ran the ball one time in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And that's when the second quarter is when a series of punts happens. Mm-hmm. SC punts the ball 3 times in the second quarter. At the end of the first half, they have a 7-play drive that gets 18 yards on a 2-minute drill that they get nothing with, but essentially a continues with the punt. The first drive of the third quarter was a punt. The next drive was a fumble. SC gets field goal, touchdown at the end, but it was... They needed to not have that drought in the middle of the game to go scoreless for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't do it. And, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about the offense here is... This is a Utah defense that we talked about is like Notre Dame. They're very good up front. They stop the run. They do all of those things, right? But SC was able to run the ball great in the first half, and I liked how the game plan initially was quick passes, little screens, little short things, not letting the offensive line become a potential weakness for the Trojans on offense. Especially with the changes on the offensive line, Kingston and Murphy swapping positions, it seems smart. Take the pressure off the offensive line. The way that they called this game was what you should have seen in the second half against Notre Dame, which was all the screens. Take the pressure off of all the screens and everything quick in the passing game. Take the pressure off the offensive line. That was good in the first quarter, and it worked. Utah, whether they made adjustments or SC just completely strayed away from what the script was, is take your pick. But they go to the screens so much that Utah is able to completely take away the screens for the final three quarters of the game. And it's like, well, then go back to the running game and try it then. Allow your offensive line to fail before, like, if you were being preventative and it worked, cool. But if Utah adjusts and takes it away, okay, well, then let the offensive line fail again to try to open it back up. But instead...
Because I choose not to run!
Yeah. Instead, that happens.
And this is where I think it's fair to be very critical of Caleb Williams. I don't think he is playing well right now. I don't think he is passing the ball very effectively. And I think his management of the game right now is extremely poor. And it made sense against Notre Dame when the offensive line was getting blown up. It made sense when against Arizona when the offensive line was getting cut through. But I thought USC's offensive line held up extremely well in this game. I thought they did their job. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can ask for much more from the offensive line.
Yeah.
And this is where really Caleb's...
They also, like I said, they didn't have the chance to fail, which is... It's nice that the game plan was to give them a nice little cushy spot.
Yeah.
But if the offense isn't working by doing that, then you gotta mix it up a little bit then.
Yeah, and you have to also be managing the game well. You need to be navigating what's in front of you. You need to be, if you are the quarterback and you are responsible for the RPO decision, you need to be willing to hand the ball off. You can't be Superman all the time. I know that his nickname is Superman, but like, it's the double-edged sword of that is coming back to bite USC in the butt right now offensively, because he's not willing to take what's there. He's just not willing to attack a defense in the simplest way. And he's taking the offense out of rhythm. I don't think it's a coincidence that USC's offense looked the best in the second half, in the fourth quarter, when they went to tempo, when they started moving quickly, not letting the defense sub, not mm-hmm. letting the putting the defense back on their heels, and taking taking it to the defense. Instead, 90% of the game is USC getting set with 25 seconds to go, having the offensive linemen in their stances, waiting 10 seconds, ending up with the defense having time to sub because they have to be given the time to sub, getting the sub back on with 10 seconds to go, Caleb changing the play at the line with 10 seconds to go, and then it's a rush and a race against the play clock.
Yeah.
And USC doesn't snap the ball with more than 5 seconds in the play clock most of the time. And it's very frustrating, and it's something that I think is indicative of Caleb not managing his game well right now, and he's not bailing himself out because he's not making great throws at the moment. And I am a proponent of, like, I am noticing the bandage on his pinky finger of his throwing finger. And when on the critical third and six in this game, he goes back to throw and the ball just flops out of his hand. Like, I am one to put that on what is going on with his pinky finger. This is noticeable. It has been noticeable. It has been the thing that has held USC back in the games where USC's offense has not looked good. This thing has been there. So I'm not going to say that it's not impacting the play. But, you know, I think that is a huge part of why this offense isn't flowing right now, because the offense has to be flowing through the quarterback, and the quarterback isn't playing his best football. And we have seen him play his best football. And even when he's not playing his best football, he still gives USC a chance to win because he can do what he does with his legs, and he can, you know, he can make the plays, extend the plays to the point where he gives you a chance. Like, that's how special of a quarterback he is, that even when he's playing at barely 50% of what we know he can be, he's not playing very well. But the fact of the matter is, USC needs him to be playing well to win these games. If you want to win these games, your quarterback needs to be playing good football. And I don't think we're seeing good football from Caleb Williams in the ways that USC needs their offense to be playing good football. Because realistically, and we knew this from the start going in, that in order to survive having a defense like USC has, they need to be able to outscore an opposing offense. And
right.
And it's not just that USC scored 32 points, but USC didn't score 32 points offensively. They scored. There was the defensive touchdown.
The defensive touchdown
and also, a special team set up a score inside the red zone. So
right,
the offense is not pulling its weight. I'm not saying that the defense is either, but we expected the defense to have trouble pulling its weight. And in many ways, the defense is doing a better job of pulling its weight than the offense is right now. That can't be the case.
Yeah. I want to give a thank you to Tim in the chat for Super Chat. And Scott as well. Scott says, rot therapy session. Thank you. I hope it is a rot therapy session. And Tim says, really feels like the program is in free fall. It's hard to keep analyzing these games knowing that the team is collapsing. I can't blame Caleb for this. I fully disagree with this. I don't think the team is collapsing. The team is collapsing. They would have completely failed in the second half.
They are playing so hard out there. I'm sorry. They are playing hard.
I absolutely think that they are playing for each other when you see them still rally at the end there for some. Like, there were a million reasons in this game for them not like to give up, and they didn't do that. I think that the team is in free fall in the sense of momentum is completely sliding away from them, and they've got to, Lincoln Riley's got to find a way to stop it. You talk about Caleb Williams not making the right decisions and the right throws and that stuff, and I have a hard time putting it on Caleb. For one, we don't know the severity of the pinky. Lincoln Riley was asked about it this week, and he said it's not a big deal. But we've seen a couple of throws that just, there was a throw to Branch down the sideline on the right tonight where he sort of air miles Branch. Is it a route that Branch went a little too shallow and Caleb thought he was going to go deeper? Maybe. Or did he airmail it? I don't know. That we have to ask this question is part of the problem, right? Because SC hasn't been consistently getting those things to sort of go their way, which is why I think that you need to be, apprehensive of you need to anticipate the changes. You need to anticipate what those things are. And I think that the offense did that with the game plan initially and then didn't respond when they got responded to. Two more super chats. Thank you. Tim in LA and Richard, thank you.
And shout out to Paul.
Yes, and shout out to Paul.
We see you, Paul.
Tim says, it's a super chat train. Thank you.
Richard, this one is for Paul. Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
We appreciate you guys.
My good old water.
Yeah. My good old energy drink.
No, it's all vodka.
Yeah. I need it.
Yeah, the other thing to mention here about the offense that I think that is worth talking about is one of the most frustrating things I think that can happen is when the players that you rely on the most are the ones that end up letting you down. Because Marshawn Lloyd had incredible touchdown at the beginning of the game, right? And yet he had his, is it fair to say he had his worst game as a Trojan?
He had his biggest mistakes.
Two biggest mistakes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
With the fumble drop that ended up getting ruled in his favor to be a drop.
Which, and then the fumble. The fumble drop that was ruled a drop.
I don't think he ever caught it.
That's tough. I mean, he's trying to make a tough catch. He's trying to make a play.
The frustrating part is that play, I think, had a chance. I thought it was a nice little dump off. That was a nice play by Caleb Williams to find him right away.
And that's a moment where I think you can credit the defense. They forced Caleb into a throw that had to be that high and had to make it a difficult for his running back. And the running back tried to make a leaping catch and didn't quite get it to go. So, that happens. The fumble is unacceptable. You cannot fumble. you know, just like no blocking, no Rocky. If you fumble, you sort of forfeit your right to ask for carries.
Yes.
In the game. But also, like, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't recognize that Marshawn Lloyd and Austin Jones in this game were weapons that you could have utilized to settle things down more on offense.
Yes.
And that both of them should have gotten more carries despite the fumble. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that this is part of the tough part is, like, we talked about it last week with the Notre Dame game. You don't expect the guys that you lean on, the guys that have been, you know, prime example, the Bear Alexander penalty at the end, right? Like, he's been such a stalwart on defense that you want, like, it's, you've been relying on him. And when it's the guys that you rely on that make the mistakes, it especially burns, because, like, you can't be overly critical on them in the sense of, like, they sort of earned their mistake by making every other play before that. You know what I mean? Like, not that they earned their mistake. You know what I mean? Like,
but you know, when you're out there making plays the way that Bear Alexander plays, has been impactful for USC's defense. You want to see him clean up those plays, but, like, those plays aren't the end. Like, you don't yank him out of the game and never let him play again. The bad one was the unnecessary roughness after the whistle that is completely boneheaded. Like, that's the kind of play that, Bear, you cannot make that play. That is completely outside of the realm of you going out there and trying to make plays. I am much more sympathetic with him with the roughing the passer call, which is a function of just today's football, where defenders are put in situations where they literally cannot do the right thing. Because if you're a defender in that situation and you're trying to leap to try and to put off the pass, and then you happen to be tall enough that you run into the quarterback, then you get a roughing the passer call. To me, I know you don't like talking about refs, and I'm not blaming the refs for USC losing. USC lost this game because they lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that roughing that targeting ejection is impactful, and it is ridiculous.
Yes,
that is not targeting. I'm so, like, to eject a player for an incidental face mask to face mask play where a defender was leaping in the air to try and bat a ball out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's like running into the kicker. Like, yes, throw the penalty if you need to throw the penalty, but to eject the most important player on defense for USC in the game on the final drive of the game.
Well, it shouldn't matter the importance. But
to eject a player for that is bullcrap, and it sucks, and I hate it, and boo to the refs for impacting the game the way that they did. Again, that's not an excuse. That's not saying that USC only lost because of that play, but, like, also boo to the refs. Don't ruin the ends of games by making those stupid, silly calls, which, by the way, looks stupider and sillier because they call that targeting and then let Zion Branch get away with what he did to Bryson Barnes a few plays later. Like,
do I blame Larry Scott for this?
It's absolutely batshit, and it pisses me off that, like, that these things happen, and it's just like, oh, well, we're the refs, so blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm very frustrated by that. I think that sucked. That absolutely sucked.
I cannot pretend to understand what targeting is anymore, or what pass interference is. But given how pass interference has been called, I'll give you that was pass interference. But I wouldn't say
on Taj Washington.
No. Not pass interference. Roughing the passer. Sorry.
My
brain's not there. Roughing the passer on the last play, on the last drive. But targeting. What is it? Yeah,
don't
I agree. What is he supposed to do?
Don't eject a kid for that. That's stupid.
I agree.
Ejections in general are dumb. Eject a player who's out there headhunting and actually trying to injure other players. By all means, eject.
Yeah.
Don't eject a dude who's just trying to make a play. Like, stupid.
And I think that the tough part is when you look at SC over the years, how many times have these last minute drives.
Well, it's always a freaking rushing the passer.
There's always a penalty.
Rushing the passer when it's Utah.
The Texas game in the Rose Bowl, no one ever talks about Darnell Bing's late hit on that drive.
Yeah, that was devastating. Yeah.
It would have taken away a fourth down. It would have been on Texas' side of the 50. Then the Stanford game in 2010. Gallippo gets dinged for a late hit.
Mm-hmm.
That allows Stanford to come down and kick the field goal.
Yeah.
Tonight was just it's another one of those. And it's just brutal. It's brutal because, you know, obviously SC benefited from those kind of calls in the Rose Bowl against Penn State, but like you don't want to see
I don't want to see opposing players get ejected for that either.
Decide those things, right?
As Tim in LA says, can someone explain illegal blindside block on the defense? I am still mad at the broadcast for not going back and showing us what that was. Like, if you are, I think that's a failure of the broadcast.
Is it a failure of the broadcast? I'm not going to disagree with that one. I'm just saying, is it a failure of the rule or the ref for not? Is there a subheading of the rule? Like,
is there a better way to explain what the thing happened? Like, could they say crackback? Like, maybe it was a crackback block, or maybe it was I don't know because we literally never saw it. We never got a view of it.
A weird name for a penalty
on a defender.
Because why is
a defender blocking?
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
Like, I don't doubt that there could be something that, you know, that could have happened that was egregious and all those things.
Yeah, but I just want them to show us it, and I want them to explain it.
This is where you need a Hockley, right?
Theoretically, they have somebody like that, and they just didn't go back to it, which whatever. Yeah.
Is literally the referee blindside block on the defense, which means blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I think that would have been one of those things, but yeah it's a night that SC absolutely will not want to remember. But the good news is it's a night that you might want to remember if you are in a legal gambling state, because guess what? Our friends over at DraftKings have upped the ante, and Trojan fans, DraftKings is running a new promotion that you won't want to miss. New users can place a $5 bet to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. You'll also be rewarded with a separate no-sweat single-game parlay every single day when you opt in. All you have to do is use our code Reign of Troy, and using that code Reign of Troy not only gets you those bonuses, but it helps directly support this podcast, this very podcast. So if you're considering setting up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Reign of Troy to maximize your first bets and parlays. This offer, of course, is only available to new users, new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That helps support the podcast a lot, like the Super Chats. And we've gotten more Super Chats. First one is Nate. Thank you. Big thanks to Nate, says, outside of the apparent injury, does Caleb seem a little disconnected? Seems a little off on the sideline as well.
I would caution against reading into sideline behavior after a loss, because you're not paying attention to it after a win. to my eye.
There's also not a camera on him literally 24/7.
No, to my eye, Caleb looks the same on the sideline as he looked. He's a very chill, casual kind of dude.
Yeah.
When he's on the sideline, I don't think that we're seeing anything different from him. That's just my take. I think it's
a little risky to sort of judge body language in general, because everybody's a little bit different.
I just always remember people getting mad at Barkley laughing on the sideline while USC was getting beat by
Oregon State.
It was somebody. It was Barkley. He was smiling and laughing.
That was the game he got hurt. He wouldn't be laughing.
And people freaked out about it. It was just like, guys, it's not that deep.
Yeah, some people respond to adversity, you know, with laughter. I know that I do.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I don't think he's disconnected at all. I also don't buy into the idea that like he's too busy doing commercials and those kind of things either. I buy more into sort of the pinky being potentially a problem if it is.
I also buy into the thing that we've seen with other, and we've gotten some questions, Kenny in the chat asking if Caleb is having a 2012 Matt Barkley-esque season. I think we've also heard comparisons to Darnold's second, you know, the second season after Darnold's 2017, which to me is usually a situation where a quarterback is now further along in his development and is being given more responsibility in the offense and maybe not doing a good job with that responsibility. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lincoln is putting more on Caleb's shoulders.
With Cliff there too.
Yeah. And because they're, you know, ostensibly trying to get him ready for the NFL, and it might be too much, or what they're doing might not be working for him. Like, I think those are very much in play. I buy into the idea that he's maybe thinking too much or pushing too hard or trying to do too much all the time, which may have worked for him in the past, it may be that he was doing the same thing. It's just that the throws were coming off because he didn't have a weird thing on his pinky, or because he just happened to be throwing with more confidence, or any number of factors. I think he's trying to do too much, and it is resulting in less.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of looking at it. I think a lot of things on offense need to be sort of, I would say, simpler, but I also think that they were almost too conservative on offense tonight.
Well, I don't know if you can say that when they're not running the ball. I think
going all in on the screens was too conservative.
Yes, yeah, that's fair, but like just run the damn ball. I mean,
sure, yeah. No, I agree.
There are better ways to be conservative.
The risky option, right? Because in the sense of, okay, you know that this is the number one rush defense, but like, it's okay to fail at running against them.
Yeah.
But like, let them make you fail first before not doing it anymore.
They were the number one.
This is like
run
the Blake Snell thing.
Yeah.
You take Blake Snell out when there's a man on.
Yeah. And when there's a reason, you know, to take him out.
Have a short hook.
Yeah.
Yes. But have the wherewithal to have the short hook.
Yeah. Don't have a premature hook.
But they also need to go down there, which is why I'm against like the idea of like, oh, should Caleb Williams have just like slid there on the last drive and not gone in the end zone? No, because you still have to score the touchdown at the end, even if you're scoring too quickly.
So,
because you still got to make Utah drive down the field and kick the field goal.
The sad thing is that this is twice now in Caleb Williams' career that he scored too early against Utah.
Yes, but last year was entirely different.
Yes, but
entirely different.
He shouldn't have to.
If anything, you can say Cam Rising scored too early.
Yeah.
SC didn't score with the time that they had on the clock, but like
what it comes down to is Caleb Williams shouldn't have to decline to score in that situation because his defense can't get a stop. He shouldn't have to do that.
Well, they shouldn't be in a position to where they have to, you know, pull it out of their ass.
Just look at what happened at the end against Arizona. Like, just because you're down at the goal line doesn't guarantee that you're going to get the points you need. USC needed a touchdown in that situation.
Right.
If he doesn't score there, I was worried that Zachariah Branch being unable to score there might result in USC getting into trouble in the red zone,
mm-hmm.
And then ruining, you know, not finishing that punt return off with a touchdown kind of thing. You have to, like, if the touchdown is there for you to score, you have to score the touchdown. Yeah. It's the difference between it's a go ahead touchdown. It's not a luxury touchdown where you're up by three and the only thing you need to do is kill the clock. Then we can have that conversation. But when you are trailing and you need a touchdown, you have to score that touchdown.
Yeah.
It just sucks that it happened on the first play. Like, it would have been nice if USC had run the ball three times and then had that happen, but you know, you don't get to pick and choose.
Let's say Caleb Williams slides, doesn't score, and then SC gets stopped on a fourth and goal.
Yeah. Then Caleb Williams is,
oh my God,
the worst player that's ever played and gets completely slated and everything like that.
Yeah. I just pulled up last year's Utah SC box score. It would have been crazy if SC would have won by 1 point this year when SC lost by 1 point to Utah last year, but alas. Anyways, SC scored last year. You said they scored too early? They scored with 6 minutes and 15 seconds left.
Well, that was
on
too
an
early.
11-play, 90-yard drive that took almost 5 minutes off the clock.
Clearly, I don't remember that game.
Yeah, I don't think that qualifies there. And Cam Rising scored with 48 seconds, which, given the way that SC, Caleb Williams had 5 touchdowns that game, I think you could have made the argument that that was too soon, but SC could not do anything in those 48 seconds. Let's open up the mailbag here and go to more questions that we've gotten.
You've got mail.
LA Fred, am I wrong for partly hoping Caleb was... Oh, here we go. It's literally talking about the same thing. It was going to slide down. Yeah, like we talked about. I think if you're playing in Madden, yeah, maybe you can do that, but you still have to score. Like,
you're down...
You're
down by 5 points.
Yeah.
You have to score a touchdown.
In an ideal situation, you don't score that quickly.
And like somebody said, USC had 2 two-point conversions that they failed to convert.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me without a doubt that you can say that USC would not have been stopped?
Yeah.
No, you have to take the touchdown there.
SC had also not been in the end zone in 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's not the wrong decision when you have struggled to score a touchdown since the first quarter.
Yeah, you don't get to pick and choose how you score your touchdown.
No, you have to just take the score. And you have
If this was 74-72, where you knew that no matter what, everybody was scoring on everything, maybe that's a different scenario, because I think you have more confidence too. That you can get in the end zone. But yeah, you take it when you have the chance. Les says, with Caleb's Heisman chase over and his season just okay, might he consider staying on another year?
Absolutely not. No. He's going to go be the number one pick in the 2024 NFL draft.
Yeah. The only way that he could stay is if there was some sort of like baseball rule where you can get drafted and then decide not to sign.
Yeah, because he gets drafted by the Bears and he doesn't want
to. Yeah, and then the option is like force the Bears to, like, I don't want to go to the Bears, so force the Bears to trade me or come back to SC. But like,
that doesn't exist. Yeah, no, he's gone. It's
Ron Murdy says, why was there no adjustment for Vaki, who was torturing us?
This is the number one.
There you go.
This is the number one thing that I think that while you can credit USC's defense for fighting in this game, for getting some of the stops that they needed, for getting the defensive touchdown, you can pat them on the head for a lot of different things. But when it comes down to it, Alex Grinch once again proved that he is not the defensive coordinator that USC needs to move on to the next level, because this isn't just a Vaki thing. every single game, somebody, it's a new somebody. It's a Scataboo. It's a mm-hmm. Who was the guy who's Arizona's running back?
Yeah, I mean there was the true freshman at Colorado who had never played before.
Yeah, there's always somebody, and you just get burned over and over and over and over again, and it's usually not like it's one thing. It would be one thing, for instance, if McMillan for Arizona, who's just an elite wide receiver, if he's just torching you, because it's just like, okay, he's just torching you, and there's nothing you can do about it, and there's nothing you're gonna do to stop him. But like, it's gadget and gimmick things that USC is giving up to all of these gadget and gimmick players. And they're very good at what they do, but like, you can't get beat over and over and over again in the same exact way with the same exact coverage. At that point, it's you. It's you and your failure to adjust, or your failure mm-hmm. to understand that, no, right. you cannot leave Vaki one-on-one with a linebacker or an edge rusher, yeah. as it were.
It's happened too many times to give Grinch the benefit of the doubt here, so I'm not going to. However, I do think that it's interesting that Vaki's way of beating SC in this game, or Utah's way of having Vaki beat SC in this game, was primarily in terms of yardage, was through the air. And so I was looking at the stats. He caught one pass last week for -5 yards. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just had no preparation for him being used in the passing game.
Which, okay, so you get burned like on said, that on like that said, one this, play, but then they go back and run the same exact thing right, on the other side of the field, and it's the same results.
Because we've seen these things happen over and over.
Yeah,
right?
So I like, just...
It's not an actual excuse here.
No, yeah, it's...
At all, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Paul says in the chat, having Shelby covering a wide receiver or running back downfield is absolutely insane. Happened more than once. Yeah, and it's not just Braylon Shelby in that position. USC has put other players in that position in other games and gotten burned in the same way. Like, mm-hmm. you just can't do it.
This was the downside of SC not just getting more push up front, because they felt the need to have to go to have more lineman types and edge guys in the box. And then that ends up inevitably that one of them's going to have to cover someone out of the backfield in man. Yeah. And then you end up just getting torched that way, right? Like, yeah. if they were able to get enough push on the defensive line in general, I don't think they end up in a situation where they have to, you know, risk that opportunity. But again, it's that it happened twice that's the problem. You get burned the first time, make sure it never happens again. You need to have a way of combating that a little bit. Let's see. LA Fred has come back with a rebuttal to the sliding thing. LA Fred says, I get all of that, but is it not debatable that it would have been easier to punch in the TD from the 1 yard line than having the defense get a stop? Yes.
You don't know what's going to happen on that next play.
But you also...
You could fumble the snap on that next play. You could have a wide receiver tip a ball into the hands of a defender on the next play. You could have a running back draw. You could have a running back fumble on the next play. You could have a bad snap that forces Caleb to run backwards 30 yards to recover a snap, and then you're on second and goal from the 40. Like, there are a million things that can happen if you choose not to score a touchdown when you are down by 5 points.
Yeah,
you have to score the touchdown.
The flip side of it is, I also can think that you can convince yourself that to take the risk on the defense, because again, if the idea was make Bryson Barnes beat you by throwing the ball downfield, you should be able to take that bet. But no, he ends up beating you because there's the personal foul penalty.
Well, that
moves him
thing.
Up 15 yards, and then there's the scramble.
Why?
And it's the scramble that is what ultimately...
The defense
ends up as the final dagger.
The defense came close.
He didn't have to throw the ball.
Close is, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Right. I know that. But like, they had the stop within their reach and they mm-hmm. and they didn't get it. Like, yeah. that's the issue. It's not that Caleb scored a touchdown that he had to score in order to put USC up in this game.
Right.
I have a bigger issue with, again, chasing the 2-point conversions and putting your defense in a position where they couldn't, they could, if they let Utah get into field goal range, you lose the game. To me, the bigger issue is going for those 2-point conversions, or just simply not converting them. But yeah. when it comes down to it, if you are in that position and you are a player and you opt not to score that touchdown while you are currently trailing in the game,
mm-hmm.
you yeah. are making a, like that. I don't think there is any coach on the planet who would coach their player to decline that touchdown. Remember, we see players decline a touchdown when they have a narrow lead.
Right.
And even when, and I have seen players decline a touchdown when they are tied and they just need a field goal. And even that, knowing hashtag college kickers, is a dangerous, dangerous game to play. Well, I don't want to, I yeah. don't think that is the right way to approach it.
Yeah, we got another super chat from Irvine Cattle Ranch I meant to mention earlier. Thank you, Irvine Cattle Ranch. It says, Riley equals Dave Roberts. Okay, so I have a take on this. I'm glad someone mentioned it. Let's say that he does. Let's say that that's the case.
Get it out.
The Dodgers have won how many divisions in a row? Like, they
it's not
the,
too bad to be Dave Rogers.
The Dodgers lose a crapshoot tournament that we've stupidly decided is more important than a 162 game, 6-month gauntlet in establishing the merit of a team. Which is at, like, if you were recreating sports, you would never do that. Like, it would be stupid to make a random tournament at the end of 162. Like the British do it right. Like Europe does it right. Like, playoffs shouldn't exist. It's the season, right? Like, Dave Roberts is pretty good at that part. That's more should be considered more impressive. And I'm going to bat for the Dodgers is insane here.
I know. But it's a really good thing to point out too, because you and I were having a conversation earlier today about Penn State and James Franklin, and I have long said that, you know, James Franklin is exactly the kind of head coach that I don't want USC to end up hiring, because James Franklin is what he is. He is good enough to have Penn State be one of the top three teams in the Big Ten every year, but definitely not good enough to get over the hump and to beat Penn State, to beat Ohio State or Michigan ever,
right.
to even beat a Clay Helton in the Rose Bowl, or to take you to the promised land kind of guy. He's just not going to get you there. But when you look at what he's done at Penn State, like, he is unquestionably at a decent level.
This is the insanity. This is the frustration I have with college football and college football discourse. And I say this as someone who does a podcast. So, yeah, I see the irony. James Franklin, if the idea is that, his problem is that he loses to good teams. Yeah, that's how the game works.
Yeah.
You lose to good teams.
You lose to good teams.
Oh, he's only had one win over a top five team. Yeah, most teams haven't beaten the top five. Like, that's how the game works. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
the judging everything. Like, I find this weird irony that, like, and I don't mean to go on this soliloquy too long, so I'll try to make it really quick here. But, like, every team in America is trying to, ideally, hopefully, want to win the national championship, right? But we know that that's not true, because there's no equity in college football, right? And yet, if you don't win that thing that you can't win because we've decided, like, it's very difficult to do that because there's 133 teams and there's not equitable, like, equity anyways, that's the determining, like, Riley is better than 98% of, I mean, Franklin is better than 98% of every other coach. So was Bo Schembechler. He didn't get fired for going 7-4 in 1982 or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyways, we got a bunch of super chats. More super chats. Let's go through these. 86 GOP says, I looked at their Big Ten schedule in 2024. They'll be lucky to win 5 games. I have them winning 4. SC fans, get used to records like Oregon State and ASU's. The real life in the Big Ten.
I mean, y'all are overvaluing teams. Yeah, well, thank you for the super chat.
Foremost.
But y'all are overvaluing teams like Maryland, Minnesota, Nebraska, Rutgers, Wisconsin, and like Penn State. Like, I'm sorry. I know everyone gets mad when USC struggles.
Lost to Minnesota 12-10 today.
Everyone gets mad when USC struggles with Arizona and ASU, but like Arizona and ASU are teams that are playing good football right now and actually being competitive. And I look at the Big Ten and I like, yes, Michigan and Ohio State, very, very good. Penn State, solid program in general. But like,
yeah,
you can't tell me that there's Maryland and Nebraska and Rutgers and Wisconsin are better than anyone that USC plays year in and year out in the Pac-12. Like, I'm sorry. Will USC have a difficult road to try and get over Michigan, Ohio State, Washington, and Oregon? Yeah, that's tough. But like, come on, guys, come on.
Yeah, I think that it's it'll be tough going playing a lot of road games, and traveling across country and all those things. But I don't think it's overly different in terms of the competition. The Oregon, the Michigan and Ohio State of it all, and Penn State, you're not going to face them.
You're not playing them all every year.
You're not playing them every year stacked on top of each other either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I
don't know. All I know is Big Ten fodder is still Big Ten fodder, just like Pac-12 fodder is still Pac-12 fodder. Like, I just think it's overinflating conference difficulty that there's no need to overinflate it.
Yeah, I think the SC struggles against teams that are very good defensively, just like every other team struggles against teams that are very good defensively. Well, and I don't doubt for a second that they're going to struggle against Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State defensively, and probably Iowa, etc. But like, just because every team in the Big Ten does play defensively doesn't mean that they're all world beaters at it either. So many of their statistics are helping each other by not facing against great offenses.
Yeah.
So, let's see what else we got in the chat here. Let's see. Alien 55, did adding Kingsbury break Riley's brain? I mean, that's, who knows? I think there's a valid question to we talked about it earlier with the idea of, is Caleb taking on too much this year, in terms of his responsibilities and, you know, wanting to look downfield and all those kind of things? And is there a world in which Kingsbury plays a role in that, as sort of like a personal mentor kind of thing? Maybe, but like, that shouldn't be a negative. Like, that should be a positive. If it ends up as a negative, then that's a wild miss. Like that is something that shouldn't, like, to have Lincoln Riley and Kingsbury as sort of like your two quarterback coaches, that should put you, that's a position of strength. It should be.
Mm-hmm. But that's where I think that there's a world where the misstep is they're putting too much on his plate, or the way that they're packaging what they want him to do, that they are coaching it wrong, that they are delivering it wrong in a way that's not being digested, or that's being digested in the wrong way. There's so many nuances to coaching and so many things that require there to be a certain amount of fit and chemistry between a coach and a player to sort of, like, there's a reason that some players do well under some coaches and other players don't. There has to be a fit. There has to be an understanding there. And I'm open to the to a world where Riley and Kingsbury are asking something of Caleb Williams that he either isn't ready to or isn't capable of or isn't digesting well enough to execute properly. Like, that seems possible to me. Yeah, because I know that when I've learned things or when I've had to apply things, the way it gets told to me matters.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That goes for everybody. And I this is why, like, I think that there's a lot of faith in Caleb Williams, and there should be, because he's a player you should put your faith into, and he's someone who I think absolutely warrants taking on as much as possible. At the same time, I think there should be more faith instilled into the running game and other stuff. So, Dave the Grader says, when your defense has to wear wristbands for play calls, your defense is too complicated. The defense was confused.
I
think that's just a normal thing, though. I think that's,
but I think it's super obvious that the defense is too complicated. Like,
that might be the case, but I don't necessarily think it's just because of a wristband.
Why is it that on every play, it looks like Christian Roland Wallace is having a meltdown because something looks out of sorts or something isn't being communicated? I don't know if it's a him thing or a somebody else thing, but there seems to be every single play where somebody is having a meltdown over, like, who is supposed to be covering who and all of those kinds of, like it looks too complicated. The coverages look too complicated. The complicated coverages are why you end up with Braylon Shelby on Vaki. It's why you end up with the other terrible mismatches that we've seen in the past with players. You know, I'm trying to think, like Romello Height or whatever, trying to run downfield. Romello had a really good game. There were a lot of guys on defense. Again, I will not hear a single word saying that this team is not playing hard, that they are not, that they are checked out or anything like that. Like, that is absolutely, not what is going on. But it just sucks because individual performances where dudes are stepping up or having a good game, get sort of wiped out by all of the other little things that pile up into the reasons why you lost a game. Like, you never lose a game on one moment. You lose a game because on 15 different random moments in different random places, things happen.
Yeah, we got another super chat from Timothy. Thank you. That says, the team is playing very hard, but what in the program is trending in the right direction? If we were trending upward, everyone would be feeling better. Yeah, I mean,
okay. Here, if the defense was straight up better, everyone would be feeling better because you wouldn't have to rely on Caleb Williams to be a great quarterback at every second of every game.
Well, if the defense was, you know, a world beater defense, then yeah. But at the same time, people in Ohio State fans want Ryan Day fired because the offense is not what it was before. Like, there will always be something to sort of criticize if you're not winning games, if you're not consistently doing your thing. So, like, what is trending in the right direction right now? I don't know. And that's a question that needs to be figured out, right? Like,
well, okay, I'll answer.
Is the offensive line getting better? I don't know. Based on tonight versus last week, yes, but I'd also argue that the offensive line wasn't put in a position to actually truly see because there was a lot of preventative measures there, which, like we talked about. But
those preventative measures were a step in the right direction in a lot of, like, not, sure. Not, and I agree, the misuse of screens was an issue, but I did like the number of times that I saw USC holding back a tight end or a running back in protection. But also, the most encouraging part of the offensive line performance was just that Utah was sending a four-man rush and they weren't getting through immediately. Like, the sacks in this game were all coverage sacks to my memory. So the offensive line clearly responded to last week. Everyone said that Utah's defensive front was going to do exactly to USC what Notre Dame did. And that's just not the case. The offensive line responded. That's a very good thing. I think we're seeing performances from individuals on defense that are very encouraging when you have Solomon Bird out there sort of single-handedly making plays on it to set up a pick six drive kind of play. When we're seeing more from Zion Branch, when Bear Alexander is being...
Branch was good.
When Bear Alexander is...
Oh, I got one.
Okay.
Keep going.
When Bear Alexander, aside from the penalties, is out there making a huge difference for USC up front on major plays, when Romello Height is playing very well. I think Christian Roland Wallace continues to play rather well. I think that Jalen Smith continues to look like a player who has something about him. Like, there's a lot of individuals there, which is why it's so frustrating, because, like, I don't feel like the coaching staff is putting individuals who are good enough to be on a decent defense, that not putting them in position to succeed, because the defensive play calls are terrible and the defense scheming is terrible. And and some of the other decision-making on defense is terrible. Like, it's very frustrating to me, because there are nuggets there to work with, which is part of why I'm just like, I know everyone's frustrated. I know no one wanted to give up on this season, but also the solutions to me are extremely obvious. You make a new defensive coordinator hire at the end of the season, and you go into next year looking for massive improvement on that front. And it just becomes very simple.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think has trended up at least the last 2 weeks, mind you, I don't know if these are things that would, you know, this needs to be the case for the rest of the year and needs to definitely be the case against Oregon and Washington. But I think the tackling has gotten better the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I mean,
the tackling hasn't been the issue the last 2 weeks, but I think that sort of it speaks to one of the issues too, where we talked about before, that if the tackling was just the thing that got fixed, the defense would be better overnight, because they're getting the tackles for loss, right? Like, they, so many times they end up in the right spot, but they just can't make the play. Well, they were in the right, they didn't miss a lot of tackles tonight, and they still got absolutely, you know, jiggle bagged on the defensive line when you give up 256 yards. Yeah. So,
well, but a lot of that to me is I don't think USC has any good linebacker play at this point. Like, it's all just bad. I'm sorry. It just, there's
which no, is why it
the,
feels
the weakest link on this defense is very clearly the linebackers, and it has been the linebackers, and it's not just this year. It's years prior. The linebacker play has been pretty darn bad for a while now. And somebody's got to fix that.
Yeah. USMNT in the chat says, when is it time to shut down Caleb to avoid injury? For the bowl game. We've got a long way to go until that point.
The thing I will say about Caleb Williams is he is a competitor. I do not think that is on the table. But I also would not expect him to play in the bowl game, assuming that USC is going to a meaningless bowl game.
Mark in the chat says, at this point, would it be better to sit Caleb for the rest of the season in order to have a quarterback ready for the Big Ten next year?
Absolutely not.
No. Also, one of the things about the Lincoln Riley, you know, era, both at Oklahoma, was that there was a replacement for every quarterback. I get the concern that Caleb leaving, but I feel like a broken record at this point. It was Mayfield, it was Murray, it was Hurts. It was then Spencer Rattler, who had 172 quarterback rating and won his last 13 starts. The horror. he's going to find something.
You know what's weird? People are acting like USC didn't sign the number 13 player, a five-star quarterback there, in the class of 2023. Like, people are acting like USC missed on the quarterback, that like USC did the Bryce Young thing, and that long string of Tathan Martell and Bryce Young and every other quarterback down, the Matt Corral up, blah, 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 that USC kept missing on the quarterbacks that they wanted. Like, people are acting like USC did that thing again. No, they got Lincoln Riley got the five-star talented quarterback that he wanted in the class of 2023. He has had an entire year to get that guy integrated into his system, and will have the ability to have that guy, Malachi Nelson, compete for the starting job in the spring. And if Malachi Nelson is not good enough for Lincoln Riley,
he's not that guy, then Lincoln Riley get somebody will in the
dip
portal.
Into the transfer portal, yeah, and find somebody who is. I think it's insane. You and I have talked about this now ad nauseum, but it is absolutely insane for people to say, imagine this scheme without Caleb Williams, when it was Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler, Caleb Williams. Like, every quarterback who has played this scheme,
yeah,
has been of a caliber that is upper echelon, if not Heisman Trophy level. So at a certain point, it's not just the quarterback. It is the guy who is picking the quarterback and the scheme that he is asking that quarterback to run. Yeah. I don't think Malachi Nelson will be as good as Caleb Williams, because I don't think you will have a prospect come through that is ever as good as Caleb Williams.
Either he is or he isn't. But the one thing that, I mean, for all the faults that you can say Lincoln Riley has, picking quarterbacks is not the one. So
no,
don't worry about that part. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for the old Cartcast. We'll be back Monday night, 5 p.m. Pacific, as always, and then Wednesday to preview USC's final trip up the road to Cal next week, up in Strawberry Canyon, the final weekender. Trojans 6-2, looking to get a bounce back for that. We will be back Monday to dissect more of the Utah game and talk to you guys then. Until then, as always, give us your emails, rantoptroy@fanside.com. Phone number 818-643-7227 on the Rant Line. And you know where to reach us. So until then, see ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.